Well, Moses hasn't got fed up with this yet, prying into his life. But what a life it is to pry into. And we've been thinking about questions we would ask him if we could interview him. And the last one we thought we might ask him was, what was it like to launch a new program? And of course, there was new premises, new staff, and a new system. What are we talking about? We're talking about the tabernacle had been designed and constructed. That was all new. The priesthood was now going to be launched and in operation. That was new. And the sacrificial system. These things, there hadn't been in this way before. And you'd think that that was the start of a wonderful new era. And from day one, it would just be pushing forward and doing wonderful things and God in their midst and everything being hunky-dory. But there was a problem, because although all of this program was new and was now launched, it was the same people that Moses was dealing with. The same people with the same problems. The same people who complained and murmured and were backbiting and full of unbelief. We thought about, no sooner had they begun this program, launched it, until two of the top guys, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, the rest of them would all be looking up to them, that they sinned. They disobeyed. And God had to deal very, very seriously with them. So, a little lesson for us. It's good that there are new things, new programs, new ideas. But let's never forget that when we're still in the company of people, we can expect that it could be a bumpy ride. We can expect that things might go wrong. And that's, I'm sure, one of the things that would have caused our friend Moses to sigh. When he had thought of this launch, and he'd done everything right. He had done everything down to the last detail. We read about that. That in the construction of the tabernacle, every little thing was done as God said. Every tiny detail of the pattern was followed implicitly by Moses. And yet, this is what happens. Well, I want to ask another question today, and if we could, we would maybe like to ask Moses this. What was it like to see past the distractions? And many times distractions come into our lives and in many different ways, and you can just open your mind to what the Lord would direct you to think about in your life. Distractions. Because when we come to the book of Numbers in chapter 12, we see that something else happens. A distraction comes along. And it's completely out of the blue. And it's close to home. It's one of those things that we would say in our own description, I didn't see that coming. And we read in Numbers 12 from verse 1. And Miriam and Aaron, and in case you've lost the thread, Miriam and Aaron are Moses' older sister and brother. Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Now, it's interesting that when this little record is given, Miriam is put first, Miriam and Aaron. Now, she would, no doubt, I would imagine, be the oldest. As we think back to the story of the bulrushes, she was certainly of an age, of accountability, that she could take responsibility when Moses' little ark was found by Pharaoh's daughter. And we know that Aaron was just about 3 years older than Moses. So it could just be the order of the age. But in spite of that, quite often you find in the Old Testament what is consistent is the men are named first and not the woman. So Miriam is given a place here. And that maybe makes us think that perhaps this is coming more from her than from Aaron. Now, much time is spent in trying to work out who Miriam and Aaron meant by the Ethiopian woman. Was it another name, another description for Zipporah, or is it another wife? whenever I think about how busy Moses has been, and remember, he's an old man at this stage, and how not only did Jethro have to step in and say, look, you need help, but we discovered last time that God also said, look, you need to have help, you need to do this, that, and the other. It makes me wonder where he would get time for two women, but that's just a by the way. But we're not going to spend time answering that puzzle, because it doesn't make any difference to the challenge that was made to Moses' leadership. And that's the important thing here. Because it's not really about Moses' wife, though most likely Miriam might have had an issue regarding that, perhaps more than Aaron. It's not even solely about Moses at this point, because it's really about them. But of course, it impacts on dear Moses. So they seem to be finding fault with their brother. And you know, when folk want to find fault, they won't worry too much about the issue. They will start to dig up all the other issues. Isn't that so true? Issues that are totally unrelated to the one that is under consideration. And they'll root around and they'll go and they'll find every possible little thing. I hope we're not guilty of that. Because what they're wanting to do is build a case. It's not the thing that's in hand at that time, it's everything else. And by doing so, they want to build a case against Moses. And I think that's how it begins, in order to create a smokescreen. Because they have a motive that's a very unworthy motive. And here we are asking this question, Moses, what was it like to see past the distractions? What a distraction this becomes. Because it doesn't appear that God is in any way going to interrupt his plan because of Moses and whoever the Ethiopian woman is. There's no hint at that. But they, Miriam and Aaron, are going to use it. And what God does, he pulls back the veil on their attitude and on their heart. And this becomes a distraction. Do you know what we see when God pulls back the veil on their heart? Jealousy. It's never seen in a good light in the Bible with regard to man. But to get a context for the problem of jealousy, we have to go back to Numbers chapter 10 and from verse 33. And we read this. And they departed from the mount of the Lord. So we're going back to their first movements from Sinai, the launch of this new program. 3 days' journey, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them in the 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. And the cloud of the Lord was upon them by day, when they went out of the camp. And it came to pass, when the ark set forward, that Moses said, Rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee. And when it rested, he said, Return, O Lord, unto the many thousands of Israel. Those words of Moses, just that short time before, suggest the great confidence that he had in God with regard to the enemy. That's important. And Moses, as he thinks of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that which symbolized the presence of God with his people, the power of God, there was the rod that budded, the provision of God, there was the pot of manna, the precepts of God, there was the tables of stone. That which symbolized all of that in the Ark of the Covenant, as it went before them, and as the pillar moved to be their guide, Moses was able to say, Dare anybody come against us? Dare anybody come against us? If God be for us, who can be against us? Look at the confidence of Moses. But he specifically talks about the enemy. Let thine, God's enemies as much as theirs, let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before. Let them run. But here's what I'm getting at. Moses was so aware of and focused on the enemy without, the enemy outside. He wasn't expecting the attack from the enemy within, the enemy inside. And so often in our lives, folks, is it not true, we can kind of take it from the outside, can't we? It's not nice, it's not good, but we can kind of, in our mind, process it and think, well, they're the Lord's enemies too, they're the unsaved, this, that, and that. What do they know? They haven't experienced the love of God, and so on. And we can deal with the fact, just as we're talking about the legislation that's being made, these people are making this in darkness. And we can understand the enemy outside. Do you know what stings us and hurts us and breaks us? It's the enemy within. Those in the camp. And you know, if something were to happen within our assembly and of that nature, wouldn't it be so sad that this message was preached? And somebody, in hearing this message, became the enemy within. Let's endeavour not to let that happen. Let's say this morning, Lord, let that not be me. And it's worse than just jealousy. It's sibling jealousy. I used to wish I was an only child. Well, you see, there were 7 of us. So you can understand that. Sibling jealousy. Why did she get that and I didn't? Why did he get... On and on it goes. You all know what I mean. But here's the thing. At the end of verse 2 of chapter 12, and the Lord heard it. What did he hear? And they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? So, getting away from the smoke screen of Moses' relationship with this wife, here's what God is honing in on. This is what he points out. This is what I have heard. This is what upsets me. It. The Lord heard it. And they were saying, the Lord hasn't just spoken by Moses. The Lord has also spoken by us. They couldn't handle being in the shadow of Moses as well as Moses could handle being used by God. Because we read in Numbers 12 and 3, the man Moses was very meek. He could handle being used by God. He could handle being promoted by God. He could handle being kept in that place of leadership by God. He could handle it. Why? Because he was meek. And that's a fruit of the Spirit. And in this passage we see who had it, and we see who didn't have it. That is also true of every difficulty that comes into the life of a church. Here's the thing that becomes evident. We see who has it and who hasn't. We see who has the fruit of the Spirit and who hasn't. God says something interesting through the prophet Micah, and he refers to these days. And he says in Micah 6 and 3, O my people, what have I done unto thee, and wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me, or in other words, prove what you're up to. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, and redeemed thee out of the house of servants' bondage. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. A better translation of that last line would probably read like this. I sent Moses to lead you with Aaron and Miriam. And it would seem that it wasn't good enough for Moses' older sister and brother to be those who were with this great leader, who were his supporters, if you like. That wasn't good enough. They wanted the steering wheel. So, down to verse 4 of 12 in Numbers. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and Aaron and Miriam, Come out, ye three, into the tabernacle of the congregation. And the three came out. Now, it's easy for us to think that the Lord's going to do the mediating in a meeting where everyone's views are aired. You see, that's the kind of way we work, isn't it? A compromise would be reached, a way forward would be found. And those are all terms that we hear bandied about. And that's how we would go about it. And then it would result in a he says, she says, but they did it first scenario. What happens here is, having called them out, verse 5 we read, and the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forward. So Moses is left and the other two are singled out. And he said, hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. In other words, God is saying, if you're used by me, by God, to prophesy, it will be through a dream or a vision. Something that God gives to you that you're able then to pass on to someone else. A secondary source, if you like. Dreams, visions, ways and means of God communicating his message to the prophet and then them sharing it with everyone else. But this is what we read in verse 7. My servant Moses is not so. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And in similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So there's a vast difference in the methods that God uses to speak through his different servants. Now these differences should be celebrated and acknowledged as parts of God's design. It's interesting that God has set many members in his body. And this is the local expression of that body. We're all different. And if I'm likened to the ear, I can't say to someone else who's symbolized by the eye, I don't need you. And the same as the hand to the foot and so on. We are all part of the one body. And as you see me articulating here, this is all because there's a brain in there and there's muscles and there's sinews and there's bones and all of this structure is working together. But you cut this hand off and what will it do? It'll lie there dead. We are together, and we are under one head, and that is Jesus Christ, the head of the church. But the problems arise when everybody wants to be the head. And the foot's despised. The uncomely parts are despised, and yet everyone is needed. They should have been celebrating God's different role. And more so, the very fact that God didn't leave them without a leader like Moses. What a gift to Israel. What a gift to Israel, a leader like Moses. And that should have been something that they respected and they should have honored. In fact, the Lord says, why were you not even afraid to speak against them? How could you, in other words, the Lord says, in light of his meekness as well. How could you let your jealousy get the better of you? You know, it's not a new thing. You think the way back to the beginning. And you think of Cain and Abel. And Abel's sacrifice was accepted. Cain couldn't cope with it. Jealousy. Think of Joseph's brothers. And we spent quite a while in the life of Joseph. And they couldn't cope with the favoritism showed to Joseph. Jealousy. I think of the first king Saul, and he was set aside, and God's choice then was King David, and the jealousy that existed in Saul's heart against David. He couldn't cope when the people in their fanfare lauded David for his achievements. Filled with jealousy. It's never portrayed in a good light with regard to men and women in the Bible. This was a distraction. that Moses didn't need, that the nation didn't need. Moses, what was it like to see past these distractions? In verse 9 of chapter 12 of Numbers, "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed." I think that's a sad phrase, because we've just been talking about this great new launch of this brilliant new program, and they're only into it a short time when we have to read those sad words that the Lord's departed. So they're sitting with their beautiful building and their staff and their new format, but the Lord's departed. May that never happen to us. "And the cloud of the Lord," verse 10, "departed from off the tabernacle." And here's worse. "And behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam because she was leprous." Notice it's only Miriam. Aaron then says to Moses, "Alas, my Lord." Do you notice the phrasing? He's now given Moses some respect here. Do you see it? He has worked out what this chastisement is all about. Now, sometimes in our lives, we are slow to work out why the Lord lets some things happen to us. Because sometimes things just come as a test, come to prove. As God knows that we can, he's been watching his servants, he knows that I can send that to that sister because I know she'd glorify me. Sometimes things come as tests to prove us. But there are most certainly, and it's scripturally true, many, many times when God allows things to come as a chastisement. But sometimes we don't see it. And until we do and realize that and repent of what has been wrong, we will never get past that. And straight away Aaron realizes. And he says, "Alas, my Lord," small l, "to Moses, wherein we have done foolishly. Layest not the sin upon us, wherein we have sinned." Now it's we, and us. And he's taken responsibility. It's not just Miriam. And how easy it is when things go wrong, that even though we've been part of perhaps egging folk on, we sometimes forget that whenever the difficulty then is sorted out. And we look and point, "Oh, I'm that person there, and oh, it's great, and they're away, and that's wonderful, it's great to kick them out." And they forget that we were maybe part of that. Sometimes the Lord doesn't touch all the offenders. But the leprosy comes upon. What would Moses do? Moses, what was it like? This is a distraction. This wasn't needed. This is just holding everything up. Do we read that Moses was angry? Verse 13, "And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee." Not beautiful. He didn't say, "I told you so." He didn't say, "That's what you deserve." He didn't say, "That'll teach you to mess with God's plan and me as part of that." Moses, no doubt, was deeply hurt, deeply wounded by the arrows within. But he prayed for her. Jesus says in Matthew 5:44, "I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." What a verse. Do we find that easy? There'll not be too many standing to their feet today and saying, "I find that easy." Proverbs 25:21, "If thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. If he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee." This goes against our natural instinct when faced with distractions like this, with opposition and with hurt. And Paul says in Romans 12, verse 19, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. You know what Moses did? He didn't avenge himself. He left that with the Lord. He didn't curse his siblings. He left that with the Lord. He didn't rejoice when the Lord dealt proportionately with them. He prays for their well-being. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days. And the people journeyed not. See what's happening? Held back. Progress stunted. They journeyed not. See, there's a ripple effect of sin. Here's this wonderful new program. And here are these distractions. And the result is, it's not just Moses, it's not just a wee family thing, but the spirit is grieved and the work is held back. Do you know there's no mention of any of the acts of Miriam, either on behalf of Moses, her brother, or the nation? In fact, we read of nothing of her until her death in Numbers chapter 20 and verse 1, and it just says that Miriam died. So sad. That's not the only distraction we read in Numbers 13 from verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I have given unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them, or a head of the tribe. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. And it was seen from the account that we've just read there in Numbers 13 that it was God's idea. But over in Deuteronomy and chapter 1, there's another account of the same event. We read from verse 20. And I, that's Moses speaking, I, Moses, said to you, you have come to the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord your God is about to give us. See, the Lord your God has placed the land before you. Go up. Take possession as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then all of you approached me and said, let us send men before us, that they may search out the land for us and bring back to us word of the way by which we should go up and the cities which we shall enter. So there we discover a slightly different rendering. Does that mean that there is a contradiction and that one's right and the other is wrong? Well, the simple thing is to conclude that the people asked that these scouts, these spies, would be sent. Moses brings it to the Lord, and the Lord then says, send them. That's not the first time that the Lord has yielded to a request from his people. Remember the quails. God was providing the superfood, manna. But they pushed and pushed and pressed Moses, and Moses brought it to the Lord. And the Lord says, well, I'll give them. But you know the outcome of that. It made them so sick. In the future, it would happen again. They would come and plague and torment and ask for a king. All the other nations have a king. We need a king. It wasn't good enough that God was their head. And God allowed them to have a king. And look at the mess the kings made. Only into a couple of reigns and the kingdom was divided. And then one just continually went after idols and away from God, and the other one soon followed. Be careful what you ask for. 13 verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is. And the people that dwelleth there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be lean or fat, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of first ripe grapes. So what was really happening there? Moses was saying, right, go, these 12, one from each tribe. Go. And these key words are in the middle of it. And see. See the people, see the geology, see the defences. See. Is that God's way? See, the spies came back with even more distractions. The spies came back with, it was more complicated than had been previously. You see, Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 5 and 7, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." God had given them his word. God had told them that they were going to go and they would conquer and so on. And as Moses had said, as we read earlier from Numbers 10, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, what can stand in front of that? Let's go. And now we find them, let's see. There's no difference, isn't there? Let's go on the word of the Lord and the power of God, but now it's let's see. Walking by sight and not by faith. And that brings another distraction. From verse 25, "And they returned from searching the land after 40 days. They did plenty of seeing. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron and to the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it, grapes that took two of them to carry. Nevertheless," so up to that point, yes, it's just exactly what you said. And here's the distraction. And if they hadn't gone, this wouldn't have been an issue. But now it is. "Nevertheless, the people be strong in the land, and the cities are walled and very great." Do you remember the wee song we used to sing in Sunday school? Way back in my day, 12 spies went to spy in Canaan. 10 were bad, 2 were good. No? I'm not going to sing it. What did they see to spy in Canaan? 10 were bad, 2 were good. Some saw the giants tough and tall. Some saw the grapes in clusters fall. Some saw the Lord was in it all. That was Joshua and Caleb. 10 were bad, 2 were good. And of all those that went, the majority of them were doom and gloom merchants. Are you a doom and gloom merchant here today? I don't know what they make of that. If you are, ask the Lord to deliver you. If you have no friends, it's maybe because you are a doom and gloom merchant. But some people just see the gloom in everything. They see all that's wrong. Joshua and Caleb saw all that they saw. Saw the same stuff. But when they came back, their report was so different. There were blessings to be had, but do you know what was wrong? Some of them only wanted to talk about the barriers. Do you know, folks, today, there are blessings to be had. But are we focused on the barriers? Barriers can be overcome, praise the Lord. Barriers are no reason to fear. Peter was in a prison, chained in the inner part. That's nothing to God. Chains, guards, Paul, Silas, all of these people, nothing to God. Daniel in a den of lions, his three friends in a fiery furnace. Barriers, oh, those are barriers, all right. But they're nothing to God. Now, if the decision-making were based upon human assessment, listen to this. Because this is how we go about things, even in the Lord's work. If the decision-making were based on human assessment and human calculation, then of course these people would think twice about conquering Canaan. Of course they would. But the decision-making is up to God. And God said, go. More than that, he said, I'm going to make you conquerors. You're going to have the victory in Canaan. The assessment should be God's assessments. The calculation should be God's calculations. Remember the time of Gideon, he was able to whittle an army down to a few hundred. Why? Because his calculations are different to ours. The spies, the 10 who were doom and gloom, were another distraction. Moses might have despaired. Here's this new program, and oh, so enthusiastic he was to see it happening and up and running, and all the blessing that would come, and to see the beautiful tabernacle being used and people having the assurance of the presence of God in the midst of the camp and their sins being atoned for and dealt with, and every other little minor thing that could come their way, they were able to go to the priest. And Moses would have been just thrilled with all of this being in place, but now he must despair. Distraction after distraction after distraction. What are walls to God? Didn't Jesus appear in the midst without a door being opened? What are giants to God? What are ratios of people to God? What is danger to God? These are the people who saw what God did in the 10 judgments on the Egyptians. These are the people that saw God get the better of Pharaoh. These are the people that saw the water of the Red Sea piled up on either side so that they could walk over in dry land. These are the people that then saw that water close in on Pharaoh's army and drown every last one of them. And yet they did not believe. That's the problem with them. And this is why it's at this point that God says, you'll not get into my land. And you know, the only two of that generation who were at the age of accountability at the time they left Egypt, the only two that ended up getting into the promised land were the two spies who had faith and who believed God, Joshua and Caleb. Isn't that amazing? Human sight will tell you that your obstacle is too big. It's insurmountable. But spiritual sight will tell you with God, all things are possible. Human sight will tell you you are no match for the enemy. But spiritual sight will tell you faith is the victory. God has not, 2 Timothy 1:7, given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. We'll just stop there for the sake of time today. Are there distractions in our lives? In the work of the Lord, be like Moses. And by the grace of God, the same power of God will help us to see past those distractions. May the Lord bless his word to our hearts. All the way, my